I'm Jack Combs, and my wife's name is Barb. And I want Barb to introduce our children to you just briefly so we can be as personal as possible, and then we will get to know your kids as we get into our groups.
We have five children. We'll start with the boys. Craig is 17. He's 6'2", so I get to look up to him. And he is a four-point student, enjoys school, plays sports, and is just a real joy. Douglas is 14, and he runs track. As a matter of fact, he has a track meet today, so we're hoping he will do well. And he's more of the quiet type. He would like to be a jet pilot. Then Lisa is 13, and just a real lovely lady. She likes gymnastics. Kimberly is 10, and she's our quiet, ladylike. Then our fireball is Janine, who is 8, and I'm so glad the Lord left her till last, because if we'd have started off with her, I'm sure it would have been a complete disaster, but at least with the experience of four ahead of her, that's helped quite a bit with her. Then we have two dogs, Laddie and Corky, and the girls are praying for a cat.
Well, I'm a fanatic for the family. And I wasn't always that way, but five children help get you in that direction, as you well know, or the four that someone else has. And the reason that I see more and more that the family is crucial is because it is the basic unit and the basic building block. And really, it's the most unique idea there is, and it's because God thought of it. And so he put the family together. It's the basic building block of a society because all of the future generations, or the future generation, is our children. So what we are investing in today is really going to be our society and the kingdom of God tomorrow. And that is another fantastic reason why we've got such an important job. Also, it's the bullseye of the enemy's target. And today we are getting an unprecedented attack on the family, period. And all of the means for a super attack is in place. Television, our mobility, our technical society. And it is devastating the family from all angles. And this is another fantastic reason that our input and our training of our children is so important. Then, we have a job that, as someone said, that by the time we know what we're doing, we're out of a job. And raising children takes a good while to learn the ropes, and we are still learning. What we want to take a look at and kind of base our time on is two major perspectives, which are in your notes. But just to briefly categorize it, the first division is from birth to age 12. And that's where it all happens. And we have seen this. We have three that have gone through those stages. They're 13 and above now. And we have experienced that what we have done in the first 12 years, we have a foothold, a foundation, or we have the results from 13 on. And the first stage is the cause stage. The second is the effect. And as Howard Hendricks has said, you cannot shred relationships in the first 12 years and expect any positive results later on. The first division really is the pliable years. We have noticed that particularly around the 10, 11, and 12-year-old age, just tremendous pliability. The teens, that's the stormy years. And we have seen some tremendous effects of our relationships that we have built with our older three in some of the things that they're going through, because we have communication set up, and we can talk about the things that they're experiencing and beginning to go through. And this has been a great delight to us. Then the fourth, or the third area that we want to hit is ourselves, parents. Dad, what do you need? And Mom, what do you need? How can we be better investors? How can we be better dads and better moms to our children, and make this investment in the short time that God has given us? Psalm 28, 1 and 2, and then, Psalm 128, 1 and 2, and then verses 3 and 4 really show this cause and effect. And turn to that right quick.
What number?
That's Psalms 128. Verses 1 and 2. And the psalmist says, "Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be happy. It shall be well with you." And as a parent, the cause is walking with God and fearing the Lord. And look what this produces in verse 3 and 4. This is the effect. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. And then he sums this up in verse 4. "Lo, thus the man and the woman shall be blessed who fears the Lord." And one thing that Barb and I have found that is foundational and key, and that is the relationship that we have with Christ and his access to our lives, his lordship, is a direct effect upon our children, good, bad, or indifferent. And when we were not walking with the Lord in real obedience and fellowship, this passed on directly to our children. When we have been, and as we are, and working at it, this is a direct effect to our children. So it has a spiritual impact in the lives of our family. So what we're going to do is to divide up, and the dads will meet as the dads, and the moms as moms. We have just kind of introduced ourselves here and to get to know each other. And so I think the two things that have been very helpful to us, and we'll just go through our notes here just briefly and follow through together, is the two major divisions that is really involved in child raising, which I mentioned. And I want to just go through and give us some highlights, and then we can have some discussion and some comments on these. And most of us have children that are 12 and under, so I think this is really going to fit. Interesting thing that Howard Hendricks shared. He said, "You cannot shred relationships in the first stage and expect to build them in the second stage." And I think one of the most important things that I have seen is developing some lines of communications and some deep relationships with my children while they are in a very pliable stage. And the first 12 years is really the ideal stage to do this. Some cautions that I have run into, which I think is very common to all of us as families, is these first 12 years are the most needy years of us getting started in a profession or in our job, you know, working. And there are highest need years in terms of money. And particularly for those of us right here that have more than just a couple of children, I tell you, four to five kids, the grocery bill is phenomenal. You know, and Barb has moved into being an expert on just bargains and how to put food together. So we are experiencing right now just a high need in terms of in terms of economics. And I think that complicates it in the sense that we've got to give a certain amount of attention, you know, to just make the money in order to make the family go. And these can be traps, as I have really found, where it diverts my attention. And it seems to be almost an enigma that here are the most pliable years, and yet for us as parents and me as a breadwinner, they are probably the tightest and the most tension-filled years, getting off of the pad and producing the income. So this is an interesting thing in itself. And so we have really fought and prayed to counteract and to give the priority to the kids, and it's resulted in some interesting things. We have just opted, we'll drive an older car. We'll make do. One of the delightful things that has happened, we've seen God provide clothes through some sources, through some secondhand sources, and it has been exciting to see the kids get involved in this. And there is a store outlet down in Barb's hometown that people will wear things a time or two and put them in this secondhand store, and the kids have just, it's been a source of them seeing God provide things that they have needed. So I think some adaptations we'll have to go through in each of our individual cases to stay on target. Let's get in just a little bit to communication in these, particularly in this first stage. And I thought these three items were just of utmost importance. The first is attitude. There are three primary ways that we communicate, and the first, or one of them, is attitude. How I feel and how our feelings affect the children. One of the primary things that this has pointed out to me is my need for stability and control. You know, one of the fruits of the Spirit, Galatians 5:22, is self-control. And I heard one person say that, you know, when you're angry, you've got to go hide. I cannot afford to infect my children with my own sinful or inferior or guilty feelings. And this has been a tough lesson. I don't know for you fellows, but it has been for me. And it's been an avenue that God has used to come in. I think, George, you alluded to this, you know. You weren't particularly family-oriented. And I am sure that God is getting a hold, or has gotten a hold, in areas of your life that He wouldn't have been able to touch in another situation. And so this area of attitude, God has really worked me over and has started and is building some exciting areas of my life through this. But we transmit our feelings, and those kids really pick them up like a tape recorder. The second is example. And this is probably, they're all mixed in together. But example, as the saying is, what you're doing speaks so loud that I can't hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And that is really true. Just recently, we were at a basketball game up in Oklahoma City, driving back to Norman, which is about 15 miles. And I had my son and two or three of the players and then the coach. So we were coming on the freeway south, and I was just minding my own business, and we were talking and so on. Came around a sharp corner, not a real sharp corner, but on the freeway, a corner, and I noticed a highway patrol sitting over there on the left. And we had quite a bit of traffic, and Doug, my boy, turned around and he said, "Dad," he said, "the highway patrol is behind us," and he had his red light on. Well, I looked down, and I had my cruise on 55. So, I mean, there was a little tinge of emotion. I thought, hey, no sweat. This is going to be interesting. And I was curious. So he pulled us over, and he said that there had been a station wagon stolen. And as we came around the corner, our station wagon fit that description. But as I got back in, the thought just went through my mind, Boy, what a great example. The fact that I was obeying the law. Here was my son, his coach, and two other boys. And I never said anything to Doug. But the fact that I was not speeding. So boy, that example, you never know when the example is going to be put right on front stage. And I think that's why there is so much in the scriptures pointed toward our own character. That if I'll take care of my own character, it is a built-in training tool that I will pass on to my children. Not too long ago, I came home and I was beat. And I was down. And so we got around the table, and Craig, my 17-year-old, is kind of a joker and a teaser. He's very sharp, to sensitive. He picks up your attitude and so on. And so we sat down there, and I was kind of sitting down at the end of the table. And so he looks up and said, "What's the matter, Dad?" He said, "You under the gun?" I said, "Yeah, I kind of am." He said, "Well, you can't take the pressure, can you?" And he really, in a good way, poured it on me. And I thought, boy, it's interesting how he is testing my character. For instance, in honesty. Will I really be honest? And then, you know, he's testing. Well, Dad, what kind of maturity do you have? And so this has been a stimulant to my own walk with God, because I know that I am producing a constant video in the minds of my children in terms of example. In the area of our relationship to our spouses, this is really tremendous and really sets up a situation for teaching. And there are some cases like yours. Do you go by William or Bill? William. That you know, God's grace is just going to pour into these areas, and he is going to mold and do a work, you know, that we can never humanly do. And
that's
so
that's what I'm hoping, because I mean, I'm not knocking my ex for not doing what I thought she should have done during the 12 years. There was spaces in those 12 years where I never saw my daughter at all. I mean, there was times there where she was just in no annoying tears. And that's not what the court said, or that's not what I said, that's what she said. And she was just being stinking. And, I mean, I lived in Thomaston and she lived up in Windsor, so I mean, you know, for me to, you know, I mean, it was nothing for me to drive up to Windsor, you know, and I'd call up and say, "Well, I'm going up to see her," and she'd say, "Yeah," you know, and I'd go up there and I'd knock on the door and she wouldn't let me in. You know, in cases like this where it was a big hassle, you know, and I just would get very frustrated, and I was saved during that time. I was saved right after my divorce, and I would just stay away and just pray. I mean, that's all I had to do was pray, you know. God said to pray, you know, and come to him whatever you need, and I just went to him whatever you need. But there's things left out of our relationship. You know, mm-hmm. With me and my daughters, we could never get it back. I have a witness to my ex-wife, and she's going to go to the Prodigal movie, I believe, because I've already bought the tickets for her. There's other times when she just doesn't want to hear anything about the Lord. My daughter doesn't get enough teaching or training too, you know, other than mm-hmm. me, because when she's with me, I'm always reading the Bible. You know? I always give the books, you know, kids' books. You know, there's a lot of things that God will have to make up his time.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And he will, because his primary interest is in us and in our children. He really is. Well, on. Getting into just the education that children need, or as they get on up into their teens, in the area of sex, we have found that it has come out of really a subliminal relationship and our own communication that gives them the information in pieces and bits where they're at and what they need. And we are having conversations now with our teenagers that have resulted, the questions have come from our relationship, my relationship with Barb and my attitude toward her and my love toward her, my expression. And so this example is a powerful thing. Then the third area is relationship. And As they move into the teens and really begin to spread out, it seems like all of a sudden, time-wise, you get much less time with them. And this is why it is so key to build those relationships and communication while they're young. Several years ago, through a friend of mine that I began to model, Barb and I began to model he and his wife and their family, one thing that stood out to me, he would spend time, particularly during the summer, with each of his children individually. He has five children. They're all grown now. And I started this. And it has been just phenomenal of getting off 24 hours with one child by themselves. Last summer, I got time with each of my five. The older ones, I take a little more time. I try to leave on a Friday afternoon, come back like a Sunday morning, or sometimes a Sunday afternoon. But the time to build those relationships. And I take the things that they're involved in and use those things to spend time with them. For instance, Kimberly is 10, and she's into learning the multiplication tables and spelling. So I'll come in and I'll take time with her, and we'll get a lot of visiting done, but we'll work through the multiplication tables. So I have tried to just build in my mind around the activities around what the children are involved in, and that gives me kind of a natural in spending time with them. One thing that I have developed, I don't look at the news. I basically don't read the newspaper. And so I will come home from work. I'll put on my shoes. I need exercise and, you know, to run out the tension and stuff. And I'll put on my shoes, and I'll either take Kim or Janine, and they'll get on their bicycle, or I'll take both of them, and I'll go jog, and they ride along bicycling. Now, Craig and Doug have been at track and mentioned running to them, and they throw something at me. So it's to come in and just throw myself down on the floor, and they're doing something, and we begin to talk about the day. But I use everything possible to build relationships. And one of the things that I learned from Lorne and the Navigators years and years ago, that if you do something, don't do it alone. Always try to take somebody with you. So in my work, I'll go by and grab one of the children. Sometimes I have to take pictures. So I'll take Lisa, she's my 13-year-old, and we'll go take a picture of four or five houses, and I'll let her take the pictures. But all the time we're just talking, and I'm listening, and this input. So that builds the relationships. And it's very interesting that it seems like the first 11 or 12 years, you can do nothing wrong. And then all of a sudden, there is some magic that happens. There's something that they drink at about 12 and a half. Mm-hmm. And their attitude begins to turn much more toward a questioning kind of, Dad... they begin to jib you a little bit, and there's where the real relationship comes out. We have 12 years to build a relationship, to set some kind of an example, and then to communicate our attitudes. And I think that's kind of the summary. Howard Hendricks has said this, that there's a direct relationship between the age of your children and your confidence. And that's really true. Barb and I had far more confidence a few years ago than we do now.
Oh, you mean it's inversely proportional?
Inversely, yes. Right. So the older they are, it seems like the less confidence you have. The positive effect that I'm reaping is that I am digging like I have never dug before. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my peers that are 45 years old have their children already gone. I think one of the greatest blessings is that God gave us children at a later age. And I've got an 8-year-old. I'll be 63 years old when she graduates from college. I think that's great. But Barb and I are digging and growing like we have never grown before. Well, just some principles. I'll go over these just quickly. If there are any questions or a comment, let's hit it. But principles in working with your child. And this is not original with me. But we need to feed our children responsibilities. And we have seen the effect of this, that don't do for your child what that child can do for him or herself. And boy, we work at that, and that's hard to work at. It's easy to become their servants, and very subtly, they will command the situation. They'll run the house and everything else. There is a lady that Barb has gotten acquainted with, and they have a friendship, and she just intimately shared the other day, she said, my five-year-old runs me. Then, when that situation sets up, it begins to negate some of the atmosphere for real teaching. The attitudes of resentment and so on come out. So feed your child responsibility. And the great thing that we've got to build into our children those first 12 years is an internal guidance system. And this is why it cannot be done in a teaching situation, although there'll be teaching situations. But it's got to go in chink by chink, attitude by attitude, example by example. And in Deuteronomy, I think it's Deuteronomy 4, the Lord said, he told them through Moses, he said, now when you rise up of a morning, talk about the scriptures. When you go through the day, when you walk, talk about the scriptures. When you lie down at night. And the approach that we have tried just out of our own lives is that our Christianity is in the woodwork of our family. So we talk about everything.
Deuteronomy 6.
Deuteronomy 6. Thank you, George. Deuteronomy 6. To make them responsible before the Lord through a series of responsibilities and talking about those responsibilities. The next thing is just a joyful atmosphere. And take an atmospheric check of your home. And boy, this is, I depend on Barb so much because I can get strung out and I'll come home and I'm just not tuned up. And she'll do a little tuning. But do an atmospheric check on your home. How joyful is it? And a lot of the things that come out of my life, if I'm not up to date with the Lord, if I am not really doing my job, I will pass this on and begin to blow some smoke into the atmosphere of our home. But a joyful atmosphere, there is nothing like it. Children ingest this. They just take it in. And you go into a home, you can immediately sense the atmosphere. Are they problem-centered? Is there tension in the home? Is there too much permissiveness? You can pick it up. So do a check there. Andrew Murray said this, and I've got him in the book list, How to Raise Your Children for Christ by Andrew Murray. It is a classic. If you get it, be careful. It'll disappoint you because it's like chewing steak. Don't go after it very fast or you'll lay the book down and never pick it up again. But he said this, the greater tranquility that a child has in their younger years, the greater tranquility they will have in their adulthood. And that is really true. So that atmosphere in our home is critical. C, spend time with your children doing the things that they enjoy. And I think this is one of the highlights that we're going through right now in our family. James Dobson says that the average father in the United States and in our culture spends 7.5 minutes a week with his child. Now, I thought that was a ludicrous statement, and I started doing some clocking on my own time. I was appalled and frightened at how I get strung out. And like Jean was saying, or Lauren was saying about worry and things that can accumulate in our minds that will just pass us right on by our children. So we've got to get that time. And we're going to get into kind of dad's do list, and I think this will really help you. It is helping me tremendously. But we've got to spend time with our kids and the things that they enjoy. A week ago today, I got up at 5:45 bumped Doug out of bed, my 14-year-old, and took him off to the bus to a track meet. And then Barb and I got up and kind of got breakfast for the kids. We jumped in the car and drove to Oklahoma State University and set out there. Well, we left the house at 7:30 and we got back at 9:30. That's 14 hours, and I'd gotten up at 5:45. And we sat out there in the hot sun at track meet all day. But that was something that Doug enjoyed, and I wouldn't have been anywhere else in the world for that. That was where I was supposed to be last Saturday. So many times their things that they are really interested in right now will make up part of your schedule. Now, we just can't dump it all in. There are limitations. But find those areas that they are interested in and that they are needing help in, that they enjoy, and make a project out of it. Promises. This is a good one out of the men's manual of the Institute of Basic Youth Conflicts, Bill Gothard. If you don't have that book, see me, but that is a tremendous reference book and a basic book that you can use. But he said this: when a father does not fulfill promises, his children get wounded spirits. Boy, children are so sensitive. You say, hey, I'll do such and such with you. Yeah. And boy, you got to do it. You just got to do it. And our children are very sensitive about that. So I try to make some plans, put the promise to it in the plans, and boy, we do it. And some other people, some other situations have to conform to our plans. Okay, D, love your child's mother. And a person has said the best thing you can do for your children, dads, is to love your children's mother. And I think that is one of the greatest impacts that can be had upon a child. And if that is not the situation, then as a father, your love to her...
I tell you, to love my ex-wife after what we went through, you know.
That's right.
Go over there to see her, and she said, well, you know, she started dictating to me, well, this is one time I want her home, and this is what this is. Well, and I'm there, wait a minute now. The judge didn't say that, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
It's tough to love the child's mother in a situation like
that. That's right.
I just kind of okay, and pull out the door I go, and I do whatever I want to do, and I bring her back, and she says, well, did you do this, and do that, and do that, and yeah, goodbye, see you later, give the kid a hug and a kiss, and off I go. That's it, you know, and calls me up during the week, and put the phone down and walk in the other room, she's on the phone, and I just can't, you know.
You can maybe redeem part of that by how you talk about your ex-wife when you're with your daughter.
I don't say a word. I don't talk. When we're together, we don't talk about anybody or anything but her and me. The time that we weren't together, then the time we were together. But when her mother comes up in the conversation, it's like you feel the old volcano build up down here, and you say, honey, let's not talk about your mother. We're not here to talk about your mother.
Yeah.
And that's what we get to
do. Yeah. I think there are some things that that probably you have discovered and are discovering that would be very helpful. And I think the principle, though, is the forgiveness and love, as God gives you the ability to forgive, and then as the Holy Spirit's love, which is going to be a supernatural love that you nor I in other situations, I don't have that particular situation, but we just can't do it. But the love of God can pour himself through you. And that can make an impact on that gal.
Sure, and that's what I pray for every day.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been divorced from my ex longer than I knew her.
Yeah.
Before we were married, during, or after. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm saying to myself, you know, God, you've got to be able to mend or patch up this relationship somehow, even if it's just to being good friends. And mm-hmm. He hasn't even got that far yet because, you know, either she won't let it, you know, or maybe it's my stubbornness. I mean, I pray about my stubbornness. I mean, I'm just about as stubborn as you can get.
Yeah. Well, God's got a lot of resources to work in each of our situations. Okay, another important part in E, allow your children sufficient developmental rope. And This is something that will come out in our own makeup and our own personalities and how we deal with our children. And it can go two ways. I grew up in a situation, I grew up on a farm and a ranch, and by 6, 8, 10, 12 years old, I mean, I was driving equipment and farming. And I had the tendency with my children to give them too much rope in areas that you'd have to have a background in and put too much pressure on them as far as what they could do. So I've had to tighten up a little bit, and I was too permissive. But it's very easy to suffocate children and not give them that developmental open field and stimulate their creativity. So this is a real biggie, and it builds ability to think, where they have to work through, and you encourage them in projects. We work on a lot of projects. We have become very project-oriented, which has been a tremendous weakness for both Barb and I. We're not project-oriented. But this really builds a sufficiency and an ability to think as they work on projects, and we get in and work with them on those things. We're doing this with some of their friends, working on some little projects as they have a buddy and so on. And then F, pray for them and yourself. And confession of faults and sins for both the father and the child. This has been one of the strong areas that has developed in our family, because I think we're so faulty. But the thing that Barb and I, by God's grace, 2 Corinthians 9:8, and God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things. And one of these things has been the integrity or the honesty to just admit our faults and our sins. And particularly, I really had a problem with anger. And so I would tell the one that I had been angry to, listen, I blew it, and I am sorry. And I begin to really work on it, and they begin to see that I took it to heart, and I would control my emotions and get my heart right. And so we have smoothed out. But just in praying together, and they, in turn, have developed a spirit of confession. And it is a real safety net, because when there is real hardness and tension, then the child commits a sin, does something against their conscience. Boy, the enemy takes and runs with that thing and blows a little bitty thing up to a giant hot air balloon. And Barb and I have found that because of our ease, so to speak, and just our honesty with our children, they have come to us and have told us things that they have done. And we've seen God forgive them, and we have forgiven them, and then we've worked with them on that. And that's been through prayer. Ask for wisdom and discernment. I tell you, I try to pray every day specifically for each of our children and for Barb. Let me give you James 1:2-8 in the Phillips. I'm going to read this right quickly. I've memorized it. It's a little rusty. But James 1:2-8 in the Phillips translation. And it says this: when all kinds of trials and temptations crowd into your lives, my brothers, and here's number one, because they're going to crowd into our lives, don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends. Number two, realize that they are come to test your faith and to produce in you the quality of endurance. But let the process go on until that endurance is fully developed, and you will find that you have become men of mature character. So we all have our battles in life, but the difference is how I respond to those. And if in the process any of you does not know how to meet any particular problem, he has only to ask God, who gives generously to all men without making them feel foolish or guilty, and he may be quite sure that the necessary wisdom will be given him. But let him ask in sincere faith, without secret doubts as to whether he really wants God's help or not. The man who trusts God but with inward reservations is like a wave of the sea, carried forward by the wind one moment and driven back the next. That sort of man cannot hope to receive anything from the Lord, and the life of a man of divided loyalty will reveal instability at every turn. And so it took God a while to get me to the place of real, sincere, changing prayer. And when I got down to that rock bottom, things really began to change, and I began to get the wisdom of God. And a lot of that wisdom is coming from a few families and fathers that I am modeling off of, and I go after the help, some of these books that are in the book list. And so there's where we get it. We ask God, because He is the resource, and I think that's fantastic. And as our children see us through attitude and example, praying for the needs that we have daily and praying over, you know, they know our weaknesses. And I've prayed with Craig. Many times I'll just tell Lisa or Doug or Craig, I'll grab them at night before we go to bed, and I'll say, let's go take a walk. And we won't go long, 5-10 minutes. But I'll take that time just to kind of pour out my heart to the Lord and pray for the rest, and they'll pray and we'll pray back and forth. But that's key, because we keep a list, Barb particularly, of our prayer requests and then the answers. And boy, I tell you, the impact that this is having on our children, we may never know. I think we'll see it if we live long enough in their own lives. So alert to spiritual danger, or alert to danger which I may have caused. This is the time, this is the reason that I need extended time with the Lord, just to pray and let Him, Psalm 139, search me, O God, and know my heart, try me and know my ways, and let the searchlight of the Holy Spirit, as I put myself before Him and the children and my attitude and my example, let Him get in there and do a work. But we pray a lot with our children, and it's very informal, and it's just, boy, hey, let's... God, man, we need this. You know, we need this help. They're praying about their friends, and very specifically, because prayer is just kind of, we don't turn it on and off. It's just, if that's what we do, that's the next thing we do. You know, no big formal situation. So those, just to recap those are real strategic, about 6 strategic principles. Feed your child responsibility. Provide a joyful atmosphere. Spend time with them doing things they enjoy. Love your child's mother. Have love as the principle of our lives. Allow your child sufficient developmental rope. And then pray for them and yourself. And these are 6 kind of check-off lists or check-off principles that you can use and just begin to grind them into your mentality. I like Charlie challenged us on those 4 items last night. So I would really encourage you to make those a part of the very fiber of your life. That's what we're working on. Okay, to move into really a little, some very practical items. These are several things that I have been working on for a good while, and this is really where I am spending the bulk of my time. I have titled it Dad's Do List, or Dad's L List. And let's just kind of work our way through these. As I thought about my own person, myself, it didn't take me long to come up with a conclusion that my primary responsibility is to be a leader. Now, I know that this is the major problem with every man. And the reason it is, you just turn over to Genesis, the first few chapters, and take a look at Adam. And I won't go into the verses, but when you get time, just sit down and read those. It's about chapter 2, chapter 3, and so on, and do some observing. And Adam failed at the point of leadership. And what was behind that is that he failed in his relationship with God. And you remember after they had disobeyed, What did Adam do?
He blamed his wife.
Yeah, but what was the first thing that they did? Adam took off, so let's get out of here. See? And he abducted his manhood right there at that point. Then the second thing was he began to make excuses and blame somebody else. And of course, our whole society is just one mess of abducting responsibility, taking off, and then blaming somebody else for it. And over in Genesis, turn to Genesis 17. And you just find this peppered. As I begin to follow this through the Scriptures, I begin to see this just peppered all through the Scriptures from page 1 to the last page. Genesis 17:1, when Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty. And listen to what he says. Walk before me and be blameless. And so what he was asking and demanding of Abraham, if he wanted that type of relationship, was, Abraham, I want you to stand up as a man and listen to me and walk before me. What did he tell Job? Go over and you labor through the entire book of Job, and over at the end, he tells Job this. See if I can find it right quick. It's right in about the 40s there. Sorry, I can't put my hands on it. I don't have that verse, but it's in about Job 39. Yeah, here it is. Job 38:3. We'll start at verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this that darkens counsel by the knowledge, by words without knowledge? Now listen to what he says here in verse 3. Gird up your loins like a man. And Job didn't make any progress at all until God caught him with a right uppercut and said, Job, will you get off of your duff and stand before me as a man? I've got some things to say to you. And my fellows, my toughest time, or my toughest, I think my toughest assignment is to be a leader. Now, I thought I was a leader of my family in every way, but I was not. And boy, it's been a rough ride getting on that horse and staying on it. I get bucked off every once in a while. But be a leader. Now, I think the important thing here when it comes down to us is really in knowing where we're going. And I want to challenge you guys, and you guys pray for me, think in three areas here: personal objectives and priorities. And in just there's another section here that I'll go through very briefly in how to set those. But my personal objectives and priorities is going to set the tone for everything that's going to follow. So one of the secrets in building into the lives of our children is that my own life is straightened out in what God has for me in terms of my personal time and objectives and priorities. The second is with my wife. And we've got to work together as a team, or if a single parent, you know, you work on your own personal objectives and those that are related to you, but we've got to put that together, and that constitutes leadership. And then third, the objectives and priorities for each child. Well, this is a tremendously challenging area for me to come up with objectives and priorities for each of my children. Do you have those for each of your children? Objectives and priorities. Boy, that's a toughie.
It seems now, that would really require the gift of prophecy. Because the passage in Job, Proverbs, that says, train up your child in the way that is right, and he will not depart from it when he's old, closely translated, is in the way that is right for him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In other words, don't force your child into a mold that he doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty difficult to know mm-hmm. exactly what path. I mean, do I want my son to be a pastor? Is he fitted
mm-hmm.
for it?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I should be directing him toward?
Mm-hmm.
That's tough.
It's an excellent question. Right down below that is five basic planning questions. And what I have seen, to answer your question, George, if, let's say, for the past 10, 15 years, I have been up to date on kind of a day-by-day or a weekly basis with my child, I believe, although my children have not gotten to that age yet, Craig is 17, but I believe that will provide the very input of this tremendous question that you raised. How do we help them launch, how do we help them launch on into their life's work? Let's go through these right quickly. These are five questions, and you can, I put them personally, where am I, and so on, but you can also, and do this with each of your children. I want to challenge you to do this next week with each of your children. Okay, where is he or she? And just underline this, you bring in everything that is possible to obtain the perspective, the big picture. So, okay, where is Kimberly? What are her feelings and her thoughts and her fears and this, that, and the other? And just take a, I have a sheet for each of the children. I have a little folder that I keep on each of the children. And so I make notes and so on. So find out the big picture and just blow your mind. Go real wide. Don't try to detain yourself in your thoughts about your children to see where they are. And you'll be amazed at the picture that will lift off of the comprehensive picture of your child. The second thing then is, what do they need? Okay, this again is the broad picture. See the whole spectrum of their needs, because question number three is very crucial. It helps you. In fact, when you answer question number two, it will help. It will give you the material to answer question number three, which is critical. What does he or she need now? It's got the funnel effect. So you get down to, okay, there are four or five things. You know, there are a lot of things that's going on with Jim. But this is what he needs right now. And you may come down with two or three things that he needs. Okay, the next question then is very, very key, because it involves working with that kid's spirit. What are they ready for? Now, I learned a real lesson not too awful long ago. I determined a need, a very specific need, with one of my children. But you know, when I asked this next question, what I found out? What are they ready for? They weren't ready for what they needed. And this did one more important thing, and I would have never discovered it had I not had this grained into my thinking. I began to back up and see that I needed to prepare the ground and do some preparation in order to get to that need and meet it effectively. Now, I could have laced it on my child, and it would not have worked, because their temperament, or not their temperament, but their attitude at that time, their spiritual condition, and so on, the seed would have fallen on hard ground, Mark 4. So I had to prepare the soil. Back to prayer. And you know, one of the key things that God brought to my mind as I was praying, Dad, you've blown your relationship in a certain area with so-and-so. And boy, I tell you, I got my heart right before the Lord. I prayed. I asked God wisdom. I went to my child, and I began to do some things that God told me to do before I ever got to meeting their need. See how that works? And boy, it is fantastic. What do they need now? And then you've got to ask yourself the question, what are they ready for? Because if they're not ready for it, it's going to be like throwing seed on that hard ground, and Satan is going to come and pick it off. You know, the winds are going to blow it away, and it's going to be ineffective. It comes back to attitude and example, and so on. Okay, then the last question is, what do I need to do to get it started? So I need to come up with a game plan. And these are the kind of the nuts and bolts of these personal objectives and objectives with husband and wife, and then with your children. And I use this framework to bang that out. I learned this from a buddy of mine years and years ago. Okay, the second thing, and this really relates to it, is to learn and really be a man of wisdom. And if we're going to build into our lives, into the lives of our children effectively, they're going to have to see, William, as you were talking about, they're going to have to see the wisdom of God coming through our imperfect lives and our imperfect situations, because just like your situation, we're never going to get life to where it's just smooth sailing. Because I tried it. I tried it for 30 years. That was my objective, just to get everything level. And every time I get it level, then it would unglue. And so I was just a dauber. I was trying to glue things back together until finally God got through to me. Hey, James 1, 2 through 8. I'm trying to say something to you. When all kinds of trials and tribulations come, learn something. And there are three areas that work on me as far as learning. Learn from the Scriptures. And that's why I've got to be in the Scriptures every day. As I lay down the Word of God, boy, I start leaving a trail of debris. Personally, with my wife and with my children. So I've got to learn from the Scriptures.
Well, you remember the Scriptures first. I mean,
that's right. The Scriptures.
When you use for Christ, I mean, there's a lot of people in there now that are saying that they're compromising. They can't compromise with the Word. You've got to give them the Word.
Yeah.
They can't accept the Word. And it makes them mad. Well, then they have to start at day one and start all over again.
That's right.
You've got to start with the Word. If you don't go with the Word, it's not going to go.
Yeah, God's going to come back around with a bigger hammer and a tighter situation. And turn up the heat, say. Yeah. The second thing is learn from my own experiences. This is why each one of us needs, really on a daily basis, I've learned this in business. I was never in business before in 8 years, until 6 years ago. And boy, have I taken a skinning. And I am learning at the end of my day, I need to get about 15, 20 minutes. And on Friday afternoons, I try to go back. And with the staff I'm involved with, we try to learn. Now, what in the world have we been doing? What's not working? What do we need to change? And I just need to relax and get back. And this is why you need time individually, and you need time with your wife to get off and just talk and plan. What are we learning? What's the Scriptures teaching us? Say, okay, and the third thing is from others. And boy, I tell you, I used to be so proud and so closed that I was not learning from others. And one of the greatest joys, I feel at 45, I am torqued out just at max in learning from others. One of the reasons I love to come on these trips is what I learn from these guys and gals. So learn from others. The other, I won't get into this because we're near the end of our time. Listen. Be a man of discernment. Boy, I think this is so, so key. Just a brief illustration. The other night, Barb and I were really tired. It was midnight, and Craig comes bouncing in from a church deal that he went to, and he's 17, busts in the room, you know, we still had the light on, and boy, he wanted to talk. And oh, I tell you, I was conked. But boy, the bell began to ring. Hey, buddy, get up off of your duff and listen. I don't care how long he wants to talk, it makes no difference. And I had a Bible study the next morning. I had to get up at 5:15. So, boy, I just had to crucify the old self. And, boy, it was just volumes, say, of pertinent information. So we talked. I don't know how long he talked. And we visited a little bit. So listen. Then this thing of laugh. I have really had to learn to laugh and just have a fresh air of atmosphere. And some of my kids know me. You know, they keep me on that path pretty well. The fifth thing here that has really hit me is labor. Be a man of spiritual power. Be diligent. And I realized that one of the faults in correcting my children, I was too lazy. I would give half a dozen commands. They wouldn't do them, and I wouldn't follow up on them. Then I would come back with an attitude of resentment and so on, and I'd put the pressure on them. Can you realize what kind of effort it takes to follow up three or four simple commands? Joe, pick up your toys. And then I take off. Well, I need to follow through on that. So I've learned to labor. And then love, we've talked about this. That's what really comes through. So there's a list that I have just made of what God has in mind for a dad, and I have put it in this, that we need to be responsible, and these are the Scriptures there, Genesis 2:15 and 16, chapter 3, verse 9, chapter 17, 1, Genesis 18, 19. Circle that one. That is a fantastic one. Because God said essentially this, the promise of you becoming the father of many nations, of all of this fabulous stuff that I promised you, hinges on one thing, and that is that you be a responsible father. That blew my mind as I begin to get the impact of that verse. Genesis 18, 19, it says this, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household before him, so that I might fulfill the promise that I have given to Abraham." And if you can get a grasp on that, it'll change your life. Then, third, be gentle and loving. I want to read this from the men's manual that they put out, Institute of Basic Youth Conflicts. He says this, "Many well-meaning fathers have resolves to be the spiritual leaders in their homes. They have been totally dedicated and they have been consistent, but they have failed because they have not been kind and loving. When Adam sinned, the loving relationship of the husband and the willing submission of the wife were corrupted. Since that time, it has been natural for a man to cherish secret desires for unquestioned power and authority, rather than for a loving giving of himself to those whom he is leading." What is at the basis of a lot of rebellion in teenagers? And I've got a close situation that Barb and I have been involved in for really the lifetime of their kids, because they're family. It's because the dad has not been kind and loving. And he's known what is right in many cases, and it just came over like dropping an anvil on their head. No relationship. And right now, with shredded relationships, they are losing the battle in the teens. So, just a wrap-up here on some conclusions. And I may not have these in the notes, so just jot them down and then we're through. Determine, and you can abbreviate this, but determine with God's help to be a dynamite dad. In other words, alive. And this really fits me. These have come out of my own life and heart. I really have to work at it. I was really a dud instead of a dad. I really was. And I love my kids desperately, but I was a dud. And I pray, God, help me to be a man of action, a dynamite dad. In other words, just as I am. But to, life. Number two, start where you are and develop a simple game plan. In other words, get a game plan. Use these five questions and drill them into your hide, into your soul. But get a game plan. I would say my prominent failures and any persistence of those failures have been because of faulty or a lack of a game plan with each of my children. Does that make sense? Then three, make course corrections along the way. It's going to be an imperfect plan, but get a plan. It's kind of like Jonathan and his armor bearer. Jonathan probably had a sorry plan, militarily speaking, but he said, let's go up and discover ourselves to these uncircumcised Gentiles. And it says, it's nothing with God to work with few or with many. Let's get a little plan and let's go. And God will give us grace. So get a course corrections along the way. Then the last, enjoy the fruits of your labor. In Psalm 127 and 128, back to where we were, and then we're through here. But this is so true. When it's real labor, when you worked hard, isn't it great to come in and pull those big clodhopper shoes off and how your feet feel? And I think that's what he's saying here. Psalm 128, verse 2. Psalm 128:2, "And you shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be happy, and it'll be well with you." And I submit to you that the most powerful tool that God ever dreamed up, which is the basic thrust of what's on his heart, is a family that is walking, in obedience and harmony, and dad is functioning and mom is in there, or the grace of God in whatever situation we've got is pumping and working. And there's where the testimony is. It's the family.